Meet or on the rocks? It's the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
I think just using practice the best that we can. We've been competing a lot of small area games and trying to make it fun. And, 2 weeks is a long time to not play a game. But I feel like kind of after that first period of game one, you're back in the flow of things. It is weird because you got to stay busy. You know, you can't focus too much on just waiting around or feels like you're stagnant. So it's fun to get outside. Yeah. It's interesting times. I actually had my senior year of college, we had something pretty similar. So I've actually been through something like this. And I think that just using practice as a serious and competitive tool is the best that you can do.
Rochester Americans captain Mason Yops as the team gets ready for their North Division final matchup against Laval, the Rocket, which starts coming up on Wednesday. Blue Cross Arena. We welcome in Dan Fates, Buffalo Plus, 13 Wham Sports. This layoff, Dan. I mean, this is something that it makes the AHL appear to be an unserious league. You understand why they do what they do, because they're also not a league that's rolling in bankroll. But, man, for the players, what a challenge here to pick things back up after a two-week layoff.
Yeah, I was there at practice yesterday. I don't know if you played the bite, but a couple of the guys were talking about it, the fact that it felt like their season was over. The fact of it's such a long layoff that it feels like they lost last series. And trying to comprehend, it's just the layoff. And look, I get it. They want to have as many weekend games as possible and all of these things. But it's unusual to have a two-week break in between games, let alone in the regular season. It's really unusual to have it, especially in the postseason. And, yeah, it's part of it. I know the Cleveland and Laval series was kind of hampered a little bit because of the rinks and the Cavs playing in the postseason and all of this kind of stuff. So, yeah, let's just get back to playing hockey in six more days.
Yeah, and another unusual thing, Dan, the 2-3 format with Syracuse, Rochester, 2-2-1.
Right.
And again, this was just changed recently. It used to be a 350-mile radius. Now it's 100. Who has the more pressure here in games one and two? Is it the Amherst or is it Laval?
I think it's Laval. I really do. I think this plays well. I mean, I was at Syracuse, you know, this time last week when we were talking, Gene, and just the fact of, okay, they're probably going to host the next series. And it's like, oh, wait, unless it's Laval. And then talking to the Amherst PR staff, they're like, no, we're probably going to host either way. So can you imagine being Laval, being down two games and then going home for the first time? So I think there is definitely some pressure in Laval here to kind of set the tone in this series before you don't want to have to go back home down 0-2 or, you know, even with the series even. I also think there's pressure on Laval in this case, not just because of the 2-3 format, which, again, does make kind of sense because, like you guys said, they're not rolling in money. But this is definitely an Amherst team that they have not seen. And I know Laval is getting some guys back too as well. But, you know, they played a lot earlier in the year. You talk about Kulik back and some of these guys, and especially the way that Devin Levi's played. So this is a stacked Amherst team. On paper, they are by far, in my opinion, the most talented team in the AHL Calder Cup playoffs. They just don't play the games on paper. You got to go out there and do it. But you look at what these lines are, is just so impressive up another lineup for the Amherst.
So, Dan, talk a little bit about that series against Syracuse here. I mean, we've got nothing but time to talk about the Amherst since they don't play until Wednesday. But the way they battled back from an early 2-0 hole in game one and not looking back, scoring 11 unanswered and sweeping them out completely, including two shutouts by Devin Levi, who you mentioned. I mean, you know, was there a moment, a switch that got turned on with this team in game one that turned things around?
I think it was part of the fact of they didn't panic being down 0-2 in that spot. Talking to some of the guys after the game, they kind of all said that it feels like games against Syracuse, which guys over the last 3 years, they've played them 50 times, which is just comical. The fact that they've played one team 50 times in three seasons. But they said that when they play Syracuse, they think of the game as a race to three and to kind of battle back and know, like, all right, like, hey, they've allowed the fewest goals in the league this year, but we believe in our offense. And I think that started to click. So I also was impressed by them in this series. And like we talked about Devin Levi's, you know, shutouts, and that's great. But you asked, you know, Coach Leone, it was team defense. And the fact of understanding the playoff hockey that there was two odd man rushes the entire series. Like this is just, and the Amherst were able to, with all their skill and all of their talent, with Kulik and Rosean and Kozak and NHL guys up and down the roster, they scored gritty goals. And after the series, I thought what Leo said was the most telling was like, yeah, we know we have to be a skilled team, but we have to be a tough skilled team. And I think I saw that. Like, I saw guys, Konsta Hlinius and those guys, like, laying the body, doing the little things that you have to do. Leo was asked yesterday about what he's loved about playoff hockey and watching the NHL. And he pretty much went on a 6-minute soliloquy about how much he loves it, how it's a pure game and how it's all gritty. And there's no dangles. There's no highlight reel goals. It just being gritty, tough nosed hockey, getting in the dirty areas and scoring goals. And for as talented and as in some part young team that this Amherst team is, they showed a lot of toughness against an extremely physical Syracuse team that just tried to pound them into oblivion, and they fought right back.
Yeah, so we get game one. That's coming up Wednesday, and you know, we'll also have the NFL schedule release, so that'll be a busy day for you and everybody over there, as us as well. Dan, on the Bills here, I guess, you know, if I had to pick a lead story is, all right, would you welcome
no.
it back?
Nope.
My guy.
All right. Do explain.
Well, I've also been, Mike and I were just talking about it, and I said it before, on the Buffalo Plus YouTube channel before, and my thoughts on Gabe Davis have never really changed. It's the fact of, this is the hot take that Sports Talk Radio is really good at, but I think that playoff game that Gabe Davis had was one of the worst things that could have happened to the Bills. It set them back for a few years, and I think it gave unrealistic expectations for Gabe Davis. It's great that he has that game on his resume. It was unbelievable, but it gave the illusion that he was going to be a number two wide receiver. And I think at times, and whether you want to believe that Bean's done enough in the wide receiver room, I think it's a different conversation, but they thought that this guy can step up and be the number two guy. And he's shown that he can, and good for Gabe to go out and get money by the Jags. But this is kind of who Gabe Davis is. He's not explosive enough to be a number two wide receiver. He runs vertically, and that's about it. He's a great blocker. He hasn't played special teams since his rookie year. He's a great piece, but the Bills have already had a lot of pieces. And for all the conversation of, you know, Bean's comments about the wide receiver and his kind of thing with Jeremy and Joe there, this is – Gabe Davis is a prime example of why you draft wide receivers, and you draft a lot of them because they're cheap. You can use them as much, and, you know, you get the best out of them for a rookie price. And then they go in free agency, and they sign a lot of money. And guess what? It's really hard to sign wide receivers that are good. Signing number one and number two wide receivers, true number one and number two wide receivers, are expensive, whether it's draft capital or paying them. So finding them in free agency. So if the Bills hadn't signed Elijah Moore, maybe I'd be more open to it. But I just don't think Gabe Davis fits into this, and I also just don't think he's the player that he was when he left Buffalo. And they said, thanks for everything, and congratulations on a big paycheck with the Jaguars.
Yeah, when I knew it was going to be a problem for the Bills and Gabe Davis is when Steph Diggs was saying that the ceiling for Gabe Davis was wide receiver one. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
You got Diggs pumping up the tires of his teammate here because he knows he's going to hit free agency and he's going to get a payday from some team that thinks he could be their number one. And of course, that didn't happen in Jacksonville.
All right. I got to push back on both, though. He was a team captain. That stuff does matter to Sean McDermott. Dan, I mean, nobody's bringing him in for
it matters
money.
So much to Sean McDermott that the following season they went from having a room full of captains to two. I don't think it matters as much as you think it means, G.
Well, and G, I know a bunch of people are saying, oh, like, bring him back for a veteran minimum, all these things. You need him to play special teams. He has played special teams since his rookie year. So you're going to call up Gabe and say, hey, man, we'd love you to fly down on kickoffs. What do you think? Like, that, I just, also, if you're Gabe, like, I think there's an opportunity in with the Giants. I know how much Brian Daboll, you know, speaks highly about his versatility, and that's what was so great about Gabe was that he could go in at any moment when the play clock was down to 20 seconds and Diggs needed a breather or John Brown needed a breather or Cole Beasley needed a breather. He could go in and he knew everything. He just wasn't that guy. And that's unfortunately, that playoff game gave unreal expectations as to what Gabe Davis could be. And I always make the analogy of whether you want to, I always joke around, it's golf or baseball analogies. Gabe Davis is like a perfect pinch hitter. But there's a reason that your pinch hitter comes off the bench and isn't in the lineup for four at-bats a game. So it's real easy to be the free-swinging pinch hitter and to hit a home run. But then when you're put in the lineup and you bat fourth and there's expectations, it's not that easy for everybody to just say, well, this guy's going to step up and this guy's going to step up. And, well, we've seen this small sample size. And development isn't linear. It doesn't just automatically get better every year. Like, that's why I think that's a dangerous place for teams and fans. They get these expectations of, hey, this guy, look at this 6-game sample size that this guy had. Well, if you put that over 18-game season, look at how good this guy would be. That's not realistic. That's not how the NFL works. So I would pass on Gabe Davis. I also just think the injury history, things like that, I just don't see it back in Buffalo.
Where does Elijah Moore fit in all this, Dan?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. If Curtis Samuel maybe hadn't shown me a little something towards the end of the season, I really do think he was banged up for most of the year. And the Bills said that after the season, and I was kind of hinting at it during the year because he would randomly pop up and he'd randomly miss a game with a toe or a knee or a back and the shoulder, all those things. So this is when kind of like when they brought in Curtis Samuel last year. It's like, well, all these guys kind of make their hay around the line of scrimmage and things like that. So, and for a guy, has had some production, was the confusing thing to me is where does he fit in team-wise? And I'm not saying, like I said, I'll be the first one to talk about how the Jets are a dumpster fire of a team. But back when the Jets were having some success with Zach Wilson early a few years ago, like, he was the one that wanted out. Like, the Jets were actually decent for a hot second with Zach Wilson, and Elijah Moore was the one that was, demanding to be traded. So that's a little bit concerning to me, as this everybody eats philosophy is great, and the Bills put up a lot of points. To Brandon Beaton and Josh Allen's credit, they did last year. It's just a matter of, wouldn't it be great if one guy just ate a lot more and you had a guy that ate first and ate last and was the dependable guy with the plate in his hand at the end of games? So, like I said, Mike was talking about it. Like, go back and watch that Chiefs game in the AFC Championship game. The Bills put up some points. It was kind of a struggle. Like, your best wide receiver in that game was Mac Hollins. Like, let's not kid ourselves. So he's now in New England. So, like, there are still shoes to, big shoes to fill and to figure out this offense, albeit they did put up a lot of points. I'm not discrediting that. It's just, I think there's still more to be desired out of this wide receiver room, and that's not a hot take. I think it does lack some things to some respects.
Yeah, it lacks somebody that another team would look at and be like, oh, we've got a game plan for that guy.
Yeah, what if teams this year just say, we're going to take out Khalil Shakir? Like, that's the guy we have to eliminate. Because Dalton Kincaid really hasn't taken over a game in his career. Like, last year, I know he was hurt and all these things. It's just, you wonder what player, besides that's not named Josh Allen, keeps defensive coordinators up at night and saying, we can't let this guy ruin the game. And again, it was great. I'm not trying to sound like some Debbie Downer here. They did spread the ball around, and that was awesome. It's just, again, in those big moments, you're throwing bubble screens, you're throwing gadget plays kind of, instead of saying, hey, like, we have this guy that we trust and can go to. So there needs to be more development. There is a lot of faith in Dalton Kincaid taking a step forward, getting bigger, stronger. There's faith in Keon Coleman's development. But we heard a lot of that same talk last year, and they didn't really take the step forward that everybody was hoping. As we sit here on May 8th, and I was just listening to a podcast that Mike and I did on May 13th of last year, and it was the same thing where I was saying, they're really banking on Dalton Kincaid taking a step forward. And here we are on May 8th going, boy, they're really banking on Kincaid, bouncing back and having a big step forward. Progress isn't linear. It just feels a little bit the same. And to Bean's credit, one, they did put up the points. That's Josh. That's MVP. He was so protective of the football and so good with his decision-making and all of those things. But 6 games into the season, it wasn't good enough, and they had to spend a third-round pick to go get a wide receiver that, once again, didn't pan out. So I see both sides of the coin here going, is this enough, or are we, in week 6 going to be going, hey, what would you give up to get X wide receiver? I don't know. There's faith in Josh Palmer. There's faith in some of these guys and Curtis Samuel's health. And again, the guy's stepping up. It's just, I like to say, you can hope in one hand and go to the bathroom in the other and see which one fills up first.
Wow. Dan, while you brought up the AFC Championship game, and we've discussed this, and I'd just be curious to get your take. True or false? Maybe it was a blessing in disguise that the Bills didn't win that game because they weren't going to beat Philadelphia.
No. No. Gene, what a sports talk radio comment. I can't agree with that.
No?
No. Why do you say that? Mike flip-flopped. Don't let Mike, the Eagles fan that's celebrating his Super Bowl, tell you afterwards. I think that the Bills would have matched up pretty well. I don't think their offensive line would have been nearly as bad as the Chiefs' offensive line was in that game. Maybe Jalen Hurts picks them apart because their secondary is what it is, and the Benford injury was a big deal. But
yeah.
I don't agree with that take, Gene.
Fair enough. Dan Fates, 13 Wham, Buffalo Plus, joining us as we look ahead. One thing you talked about this time last year, hey, it's rookie minicamp tomorrow. Yeah. What are some of the storylines that you're going to be looking for? Is this just, hey, here's what the guys look like on the field, let's shoot some video here tomorrow?
Yeah, that's a lot of it. I kind of want to see the size of Maxwell Harrison. They talked about him adding weight, but again, it's a smaller frame guy. And I do want to see what Deion Walker looks like in person, the massive human being that he is. So you're kind of just trying to get in a feel of some of the vibes of the body types of a TJ Sanders and some of these pieces that they brought in and thinking about how they fit, you know, Landon Jackson. Like I have high hopes that this revamped, overhauled defensive line is going to be better, and I borderline on could be special. Like I like all of the different body types. Like we always talk about like the wide receiver room. You want it to be like a basketball team, like where you have your point guard and your center and guys that can do a lot of different things. And I remember before the draft, I was kind of saying you don't necessarily automatically need a one technique, some guy to just eat up double teams. Like I'm intrigued by TJ Sanders, who's maybe a little bit undersized, but can penetrate. And Mike and I talk about it all the time, like the Eagles sometimes, for how good their defensive line is, and that seems to be the model because it's the overreaction to the Super Bowl champs of like, don't worry about so much the size of players. Put your best four guys that can disrupt the quarterback and line them up and say, go get them. And I'm intrigued by that because I think they do have the difference between Deion Walker's size and TJ Walker's TJ Sanders' penetration ability, paired with Ed Oliver, paired with Joey Bosa, and then you have length of Landon Jackson and Gregory Rousseau. I think that can pose some problems for a defensive line that they can kind of throw a lot of different things at you. And I like the fact of what Javon Solomon could bring because now he's the short, speedy, bendy, flexible edge rusher. Like I like the fact that they can have a lot of different things, a lot of different body types, but that's what I'm excited to see for this Bills defensive line for tomorrow, as well as when we get to training camp.
So Dan, if you had to pick one roster hole for the Buffalo Bills, is it wide receiver that we spent time talking about before? Is there another position where you could say the Bills could use a bit of an upgrade there?
Also, I guess I'm worried about the depth at linebacker. Hmm. So like we were talking about that on our most recent podcast, we did like a state of the Bills defense. And we talked about which group has the highest ceiling, which group has the highest floor, lowest ceiling, lowest floor kind of thing. And Mike kind of pushed back, and I get it. Mike and Jed both said that, like, they're concerned about the safety. To that, I say, if there's one position last year I was very concerned about, and they were fine. I'm not saying they were good. I don't want to get my words twisted. I'm not saying that they were good, but they were fine. They were serviceable. For as much as people are upset about DeMar Hamlin and the Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop, like they were fine. And if there's one position I trust more than anything, it's that Sean McDermott is going to coach up the safeties to be serviceable, that they're not going to cost you a game. None of those guys, in my opinion, are going to be Pro Bowlers, but I think they're going to be fine. My concern is that what will Matt Milano be? And what if another injury happens? Is Dorian Williams ready to take the next step? And what happens? I don't think there's a lot of depth behind Terrell Bernard and Dorian Williams and the health of Matt Milano. Like, I think that position could get a little squirrely, that if one of those guys goes down, they would absolutely have to be in the market for a veteran, because I'm not sold on Baylen Specter. I'm not sold on Buffalo Joe's a great story, but that's a story, and we're still trying to figure that out. Like, we thought maybe there'd be a linebacker they would take in this draft, and they didn't. So that could be a market where they look a little thin, in my opinion, behind those top 2.5 guys, whatever you want to call who's 2A and who's 2B between Dorian and Milano.
Dan Fates, Buffalo Plus 13 Wham, talking some Bills football. Dan, by the time we talk next week, the schedule is going to be out. And quite honestly, I thought we would have had some sort of teasers here, whether that's here's Philadelphia, who they're opening up against, here who are going to be the international games, and maybe we get that in the days leading up to it. But, you know, in regards to the Bills, your thoughts on what a good Bills schedule would look like, and are you buying into any of the chatter that the Bills are going to get tapped on the shoulder for one of these Christmas games?
Yeah, I think they could absolutely get tapped on the shoulder for a Christmas game. That's kind of the thing I'm hearing. But, guys, they can't come out with a schedule until we know what Aaron Rodgers is doing.
Oh, right.
Obviously. So, obviously, the league has to wait until that. But, yeah, I mean, it's Josh Allen. It's the MVP. It's primetime. I'm sure they'll get a ton of primetime games again. But will they get an international game? I guess that's the other thing I'm wondering about. As we approach, but I think the home schedule is a bear. So that's something that I'm kind of looking at in that spot, because who would it be then on Christmas? Obviously later in the year. And it's kind of the same thing. I was scouring our Buffalo Plus podcast from a year ago, because it feels a little bit like deja vu, and kind of saying like, hey, like there's a lot of new pieces on this offense that they're hoping take the next step. You'd like it to be light early. You'd like to have some of those games early are against more of the weaker opponents, which is kind of what we were hoping for last year.
Dan Fates, the 13 women, you brought him up. What are the Steelers doing?
I don't know. Gabe Davis, maybe that's what maybe that's what they're thinking.
Yeah.
He could fit there.
Could it be, Dan, and I said this yesterday, and no Steeler fan pushback, could it be that this is a franchise that views themselves, they have the arrogance to view themselves as elite, a 10, when they're actually a 4. And, the idea that they don't have a plan, a concrete plan at quarterback, the idea that they gave up George Pickens, that they don't have really somebody to slide into that role other than Robert Woods? What are they doing?
Yeah, they just seem like they don't have much of a direction. And you're right, it's a little bit of that, well, we're the Pittsburgh Steelers and this is how we play, but you don't really have the dogs in the fight to play the way that you want to. And it's so funny because I thought their draft was a little bit underwhelming to most respects. And I know it's the draft. I joked around about the fact that after the draft, every fan base is in their honeymoon phase and every player is a steal that you get, and every player that went above you, it's all that was a reach. And I joked around about the fact of, Dorian Strong is a guy that I saw literally two different analysts, one say that he cannot play man coverage, and then I heard Greg Hosell on One Bills Live say that he's the best man. Somebody told him he's the best man corner he's ever seen come out of Virginia Tech. So, like, you can see all these different things. But I go, the Steelers are kind of approaching what the Giants kind of have become, of just a rudderless ship that doesn't know what they're doing and seemingly making the wrong decision at every turn. But the Giants all of a sudden kind of have a little bit of swagger back and excitement about the way that they handled the draft. And I just don't feel that same energy and excitement coming out of the Steelers of, here we go again, we're going to roll out Mason Rudolph and just kind of run it all back and do it again and just hope to be, you know, we'll probably be 500 and that's good enough. So I am not sure, because I thought DK and George Pickens would be a fun 1-2 combo. And they kind of kiboshed that.
Dan Fates, tell us what's coming up 13 Wham tonight and the schedule coming up here for Buffalo Plus.
Yeah, we're talking more Amherst. I was at practice yesterday, and it seemed like half the team spoke. So fun to kind of get to joke around with them. I was asking them about yesterday I did a story about how they're spending their time. The team is having a movie night, which they are very excited about. They're going to go see The Accountant 2 tonight. They got a bunch of guys that have been golfing. And then as well as, you know, obviously still – getting ready tomorrow. Mike and I will be up at rookie minicamp. We will have a recap from there. And then early next week, probably Monday or Tuesday, we'll have like our thoughts previewing the draft, what games we think would be slotted as prime time. And then next week, later in the week, we will probably have our state of the Bills offense. And I wish we could podcast that now, because I just have so many thoughts about this offense that I'm jotting down notes so I don't forget it. So that one will probably come out like Thursday of next week.
Fantastic work as always, buddy. Thanks for the time this afternoon. Have a great weekend.
Take care, guys. Go Braves.
Dan Fates, 13 Web Sports, Buffalo Plus. Stopping by the sports bar to break it all down. Amerks Bills.
Well, bring him in because you don't want to be like, well, I could see Davis working. Maybe, maybe not. No, that's a no. We moved on from this for this reason.
I would say the only reason why you would bring Gabe Davis back is if Josh Allen said, I want Gabe Davis back. Other than that, short of that, ain't coming back.
McDermott does this all the time on defense, but I think when it comes to, hey, you're an extra corner, extra linebacker like A.J. Klein, it's a lot different than a wide receiver. Or do I have that wrong?
I don't know that that's necessarily wrong. I just think that with McDermott's specialty being defense, he knows who he can trust, and the guys that he trusts the most are the guys that have been in his defense for a lengthy amount of time. Why do you bring back Trey White? Why do you bring back A.J. Klein and you know, Dean Marlowe and, you know, like Josh Norman, all of them, right? Like, yeah. These are guys that he trusts, and over the course of time, Trey White being the latest, you see him go back and revert to those guys in his defense. On offense, I really think it just comes down to, what does Josh want? Does Josh want to try and run it back with Gabe Davis? Or is he going to try and make it work with what he has now? And I think he's probably okay with what he has now.
I think it's all a moot point because ultimately somebody's going to offer Gabe Davis more playing time, whether that's Pittsburgh as a two, or more money, whether that's the Giants or somebody else.
I mean, statistically, Elijah Moore is way better than Gabe Davis. Statistically.
He's younger.
Yeah. Josh Palmer. We'll see what we have. I mean, there's reason to believe that the wide receiver core this year, right now, is better than it was a year ago at this time.
I think Dan makes a good point, too, that keep drafting wide receivers. And this is why Brandon Bean maybe got upset, because he probably knows this to be true.
He wanted them.
The percentage of times you actually re-sign your own draft pick at wide receivers. Number one, they don't pop. You've got to keep trying. Number two, when they do pop, they get overpaid. That's the problem. 27% of the time since 2000, a team that drafts a wide receiver will give them the second contract. That is ridiculously low.
Sure. And we know that he had seven guys in before the draft, and he wasn't able to draft any until the seventh round. So it was probably something that he desired, wasn't able to get done. Going to deal with what we have, and I actually think it's not that bad. I think they're going to be okay, and I could argue that they're in better shape this year at the position than they were last year. You brought up the Giants, or Dan brought up the Giants. I know you have more thoughts on the New York Giants here.
Oh, don't do I ever hear. And I've got kind of a puzzle here. We can not a puzzle, just a debatable topic. Who's the cheapest organization in sports?
Ooh.
Think about that. I'm going to present my evidence today. As they're in the news, of the four major sports, which team doesn't ever, ever, ever spend? And their fans, they're just so beaten down. The answer is not the Buffalo Sabres, by the way, although I would listen to that argument.
Interesting. Okay, we'll get to that. We got Mia O'Brien, the co-host of Helmets and Heels on 1010XL in Jacksonville, joining us to talk more. Gabe Davis as well coming up next hour. Your calls are always welcome at 585-8664-FAN, 866-4326.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.